This is a Pinball News production.
Welcome to Texas Pinball Festival. Thank you for coming today. My name is Chris Munson. I've been a member of the pinball community since 1998 and have experienced a wide array of everything from doing complete ground-up restorations to fixing boards to working in a pinball cabinet shop. So hopefully I have something to say that will interest you. Let me ask a quick question first. Does anybody here not own a pinball machine? I'm glad to see you. Thank you for coming. Because I know that for a lot of people, this is going to be very basic and rudimentary. It's meant to be that way. But what this is intended to do is to kind of go ahead and give a roundabout view of, hey, look, I'm a person who is interested in pinball. That's why I'm here. What are the kind of things I need to think about? And this is something that every one of us that have had to go through this without any kind of primer like this have suffered through. Because a lot of times you just don't know what to do. You don't know who to ask. And it's an arduous process that we all go through. Most people get started on the internet, and those are the kind of things we're going to talk about. So anyway, Pinball for Dummies 101, or I would like to buy a used car, please. Do not let this statement be lost on you, because truly, buying a pinball is like buying a used car. Unless you're going to Stern, who is the only current manufacturer of pinball machines, you are buying a used product. And that used product is going to carry with it a history which is going to be full of either original manufacturing problems and or abuse caused by an operator that handled it, people that played it in its past, on and on and on. You're going to inherit all those things. Those are the things you're going to have to deal with. All right. Next slide. All right. What pinball is not. Now, again, like I say, this is very basic, but there's points I want to make here. Don't expect to treat it like any of the following things. Pinball is not the family dog. Why is it not the family dog? Well, mostly because you don't have to clean up after it. And you don't have to feed it. But you've got to give a pinball machine attention. Most people, here's what happens. They go out and they find a pinball machine. They do whatever it takes to get it in their home. They get it up and running. They play the snot out of it. We all do. I've done it. You're thrilled to have it. You want to play it. You want to learn it. Well, after a while, you're going to get tired of it like everything. Most of you have watched your kids in video games. It's the same sort of thing. Now your game sits there. Game's going to develop problems from just sitting. And it doesn't just happen to the electromechanical games, which are the ones that particularly suffer because it's all a bunch of switches and mechanical parts, but it happens to the electronic games too. An outdoor recreation item. All right, well, that's me and my family out on a boat in Tennessee a couple years back. I'm going to bring that up again later because I've got a good story behind that. But that has to do with a pinball not really being something you put outside or have outside. Again, we'll talk about that. A toy for kids to climb. You know, I've seen it happen. I've been in people's homes. It's not, you know, it's a commercial product. It was built to be robust, but it's not really something for your kids to climb all over. Yeah, they're going to get on it. They're going to beat on the ball, you know, beat on the flippers and whatnot. But you don't want them banging on the back glass or banging on the glass and that sort of thing. Piece of fine furniture. I guess it depends on your own personal interpretation of fine furniture. You know, it's not like you have to wax it. You have to be real careful around it. Then again, you know, back to the kid point, you don't want your kid going up and putting crayons all over it and taking a key and scratching it and whatnot. And there are some basic maintenance things, which we'll get into later, that you really need to consider because, again, if it sits, it's going to deteriorate. Going back to the analogy of it's like a used car. A car sits there, it's going to deteriorate if you don't do anything with it. Next. All right, what pinball is. That's a picture of my son when he was about 5 years old. He dressed up in some kind of goofy little get-up and decided to go play, and I thought, well, it's a good picture opportunity. And that lower picture is when I actually worked at that cabinet shop. It was here in Plano. It was called Big Time Cabinets. I was the production manager there. And I've kind of listed out, you know, it's family fun time, it's fun with friends. I mean, obviously everybody's here, you know, in a collaborative effort. It's memories of the past. Now, personally, that's my story. Back in 1998, I don't know, I can't even remember what prompted me, but I saw a game sometime or something, and I thought, wow, pinball. You know, I used to play a lot of pinball when I was a kid. Whatever happened to these things? Because, of course, they've disappeared from, you know, common venues, bowling alleys and whatnot. I got on the internet and it was an avalanche from there. I met a guy at work who knew pinball, and I started getting to know the local community of pinball enthusiasts, and it was downhill from there, and it just led to complete and utter madness, which, again, we'll get into that. A part or full-time job, there's a lot of people here in this particular show today that, you know, do pinball either as a part-time job. Evan, who I'm talking with today, who's going to be talking today, who I work with, Evan, it is his full-time job. He does local service on pinballs and is very adept at it. A hobby and an obsession, you know, make it what you want. There's guys who go nuts over this stuff. You know, Shannon here, he's one of them. I used to be part of the organizing group of you know, Texas Pinball Festival. We're all a little crazy, but you've got to be. A way to fill your home or garage with lovely furnishings. Yes, yes, it's the old. Hey, honey, can we? You know, the formal dining really isn't used for anything. Can we? It doesn't go over very well. But I know guys that have done it, so I, you know, wish you all luck.
Any tips on that?
We'll question and answer.
Buy what she wants first.
All right, next slide. Visiting the lot. This is probably the best example of the used car deal. Why buying a pinball could be like buying a car. The Palooka, the Pinto. Everybody knows the Pinto? Medieval madness, which I've called madness here in the Mercedes. Don't lose this point also. When it comes to buying pinball, it's not a question of always buying a used car, but it's also a question of buying a product that has a specific value because of what it was, what it is, how popular it is, the whole song and dance. The Palooka and the Pinto, yeah, you know, basic machines, older, cheap. Medieval madness, you're up there. If you got the cash and you can find one, great. Well, for a lot of people, that's the way the Mercedes is too. So that's the point I'm trying to make there. And again, you're going to get all kinds of variations above, beyond, below, between that. I mean, you name it. You've seen the machines here. There's just a huge variety from a number of manufacturers. It satisfies a lot of different needs. Not every machine that was ever made was a winner, you know, for the manufacturer or for the operators that carried them. Some were, some weren't. Next. All right. We'll skip the photos here for a few minutes. All right. Where do I find the games and what do I face? Oh, yeah. The internet is pretty much the obvious choice, because you get on the internet, you punch in the word pinball, and you're going to get absolutely bombed. And you, just like everything else, you're going to get stuff that just doesn't matter, and you're going to get a lot of important stuff too. The biggest thing about the internet, of course, is trust, because you don't know who you're dealing with. Game vendors. A lot of game vendors, a lot of guys out there on the internet that say, hey, I've been in business for this many years, that many years. Again, you got to do your research. You got to find out if these guys are worth their salt, because some are, some aren't. It's a fact. Individuals. Again, if you don't know these people you're buying from, you know, they can be 250 miles away. You can go take a drive, you can get there, and it will be absolutely misrepresented. It will not be what you thought it was. What do you do then? Auctions. Oh, auctions are fun. Here in the DFW area, we have super auctions, and back in the late 90s, early 2000s, they were about every 3 months?
It's still every two.
Still every two, okay. I've been out of them for a while. Anyway, auctions are a great place to go, but auctions are typically where the people at the auction house have gone out and bought bulk buys of pinballs from operators' hands that have sat and languished in nice, hot, dusty, slash wet, you name it, warehouses, and condition is the big thing. You don't know what you're getting. Most of the time, you're going to walk up to a game at an auction, it's going to work. Well, yeah, it could be Band-Aid, you know, it could have been Band-Aided together. There's a lot of junk there. You got to know what you're doing. Manufacturers, as I mentioned early on, Stern is the only manufacturer nowadays of pins. Expensive. Flat out, for home use, you know, you're talking $3,000-$4,000. If you've got the kit, $5,000, okay, thanks. again, because pinball is not in the public mainstream anymore, Stern is not pumping out 15,000 of a given title like some manufacturers did back in the 70s. So you're going to pay for it because they have to get their cost back somehow. Part vendors, again, some guys carry parts and pinballs. Warehouses, man, warehouses are so much fun. And if you get to know people and you get an opportunity to go to a warehouse, do it just for the sheer enjoyment, because it's amazing what you will see. I've been in 3 warehouses myself, one down in Waco, one in Oklahoma City, and one here in Dallas. Boy, the operators, you know, once they don't make money on a game anymore, they put them away and they let them sit. Every critter in the world climbs inside of those things, and they're full of cobwebs, and they sit in all the temperature cycles that we typically have, and they just get beat to death. It's amazing. They sit under leaky pipes. I bought one that had done that. Smart guy. Distributors, you know, there used to be a lot of distributors of coin-op equipment in the even in some of the smaller areas, especially the major areas. A lot of these guys have gone out of business now. Some of them still do have stashes of pins. Again, that's really a who you know type thing. It's not something that the public generally is going to make a phone call and go, "Hey, do you have pinballs?" And they're going to go, "Who are you?" So it's a little bit of an inside thing. And then of course shows and places like this, Texas Pinball Festival Expo, Allentown. Man, it's great because you got a lot of games here that are running and they're available for sale, and it's really helpful to the first-time buyer because you got a big selection, they're reasonably priced, and you know you're going to walk away with something that works in the first place. So do your homework. That's the big thing. And again, that's just it's an extensive overview, but I'm sure there's things I haven't thought of, but those are kind of the things you need to think about. Next. All right. No, it's a lot of information, folks. An informed buyer is a smart buyer. It's like buying a car. Buyer beware, keep the used car concept in mind. Man, I'll tell you, like I said, some things are just band-aided together. You know, and you as a first-time buyer, you're going to have no idea. You're going to take it home, you're going to play the snot out of it for 24 hours, it's going to break. If you bought it from somebody who doesn't service it after the support, what are you going to do? Who are you going to go to? There's a lot of guys out there that do a lot of fly-by-night operation. Research, ask questions, compare prices, buy guides or magazines. There are magazines out there, okay? There's a lot of publications out there that you can still buy that concern pinball and concern coin-op equipment in general. There are price guides. Price guides are not always accurate. The price guides do vary according to a lot of things, the economy and whatnot. Ask a lot of questions. You people who don't have machines, if you're considering getting machines, ask. Don't be afraid to walk up to people downstairs and ask questions. People love to get the questions. They want to know. They want to know what you're interested in. Costs vary wildly and depend on many factors. Again, we'll go back to, you know, going back to slide one, that's all it's about. Deals, yard sales, garage finds, bulk buys, treasures. Again, all venues that you can find the machines in. A lot of people have a lot of stuff hidden in their garages. Sometimes you'll see them at yard sales, but then again, it's first come, first serve. It's the guy who gets on Craigslist and goes,
his name is Marcus.
What's that? Yeah. You know, who's going to make the call and get there at 6 in the morning before the yard sale even opens and get it? Conditioning, cosmetics, personal preferences. What do you like? Look at all the themes downstairs. Look at all the years. Look, I mean, it's incredible. And it covers every possible topic. What vintage? Do you want an electromechanical machine? Do you want a solid-state machine? Do you want a more modern DMD? Themes, culture, sports, history, fantasy. Some people have collections that are based on hockey. Some people have collections that are based on cars. I mean, that's how much of a variety there is. And rules, that's my favorite one. Yes, pinball does have goals, you know? Most people, even myself at one time, as I sheepishly admit, you know, they slap the ball around, and that's mostly what they think it is. Well, I'm just going to hit something randomly. I mean, machines back even to the 50s and 60s have a rule set that explains what the goal is and what you're trying to achieve. And, of course, the modern games are very, very complex, and they have a lot more going on, and they're much more interesting. All right, let's not put the pin on the porch. This is where I get to tell my story. Where, oh, where does my pinball belong? All right, like a cars consist of several different materials. That's what a pinball is. Pinball is wood, it's glass, it's metal, it's paint, it's rubber, it's plastic. Humidity, heat, sunlight are enemies. This is why these pins that sit in these warehouses for years get the snot beat out of them. Because they can't, they're not built to deal with that sort of thing. Garages are a great place for cars, but all right, that's my garage. And that's only part of the garage, okay? But that's what happens. We don't have the luxury of basements here. You guys up north, shut up. I used to live up north. But that's what we have to do. And if you become a collector, you've got to find a place to put them. And unfortunately, the garage isn't the best place. And you don't have a choice. Porches are for sitting, watching birds, and having a drink. Oh, and that the bottom slide there was kind of, it's not real obvious, but it was kind of to show the sort of things that happen when a playfield sits out in the open. You get busted rings and you get playfield delamination, and it just gets to be a general mess. And if you have any interest whatsoever in fixing all that stuff, you're going to spend a lot of time and effort and money potentially. Several years back, this was probably 99, there was a gentleman who called me, it might have been 2000, a gentleman who called me and said, hey, I've got a pinball I need some maintenance on. Is it great? So where are you at? Well, he was out in Fort Worth. So I took a drive. It was a nice long drive. And I get there, and he's got this wonderful Flash Gordon 1981 Bally pinball sitting on his back screen porch. Well, let's talk about rusty metal parts. Let's talk about delaminating cabinet. Let's talk about peeling back glass. Let's talk about connectors that had oxidation on them. You know, that's the whole thing about the outdoor recreation item. Don't go sticking these things out on your porch. They're not made for it. They will create so many problems as a result. And if you have any intent whatsoever of keeping any value in your game, that's a sure way to destroy it. So are we good so far? Any questions? Any comments? We all awake?
I awake.
Okay, thank you. Next. All right, I'll try to go through this quickly. Like mechanical safety considerations. I lifted weights in high school, what's the big deal? Like an automobile, pinball machines contain lots of mechanical parts, most of which can be serviced by the owner. Still the average Joe thinks, hey, I can fill in the blank, lift, work on, move, alter, duct tape, hot glue, spray paint, rewire. Yeah, without knowing what he's doing. Pinball is more user-friendly than a car in some ways, but can pose some general hazards. You know, moving these things is not a picnic unless you have the right kind of tools. And a lot of guys getting into this the first time. My favorite, and I know Evan can attest to this, my favorite is the fact that, you know, here in Texas, again, without basements, even though they are downstairs, we get to go upstairs because of our game rooms. And upstairs is always fun with pinballs. Try carrying a black hole upstairs. You guys have seen the black hole downstairs? Those things are 300 pounds. And if you don't pull it apart and pull the playfield out of the cabinet, get it all apart, take pieces up, forget about it. You're going to have three people on it that are all going to be crushed under the weight. It's nuts. Again, this is just basic stuff. Playfield glass, geez. The glass you see on the top of the game is tempered glass, folks, like the glass they have in cars, okay? If you break it by accident, it's going to bust into a million pieces. It's going to be messy, but you can vacuum it up. Do not go and buy a cheap piece of plate glass and put it in there. Because if that guy busts, you're going to end up with some major injuries. Because that stuff will shred you. Because it doesn't bust into nice little pieces. It's just a warning. I've seen it happen. I don't want kids getting injured, that sort of thing.
That's just pulling it out of the game.
Right. Yeah. Weight, pinballs are heavy. Going back to that. Back glasses, geez. Back glasses are tempered glass, too. They're silk screen on the back. They hate mishandling.
The newer back glass.
Yeah. They hate mishandling, and a lot of them, you can't find them anymore. They're out there. You're going to pick. Some are reproduced. It really depends on the title. Again, just a caution. Wood cabinets splinter. Use caution when carrying. Metal can be sharp, especially under playfield parts. There's a lot of nice, sharp crap underneath if you've never worked on one before. Wobbly legs, not your wobbly legs, the pinballs. Make sure everything is tight. and the door pinch point. Keep your kids out of the door. Keep the door locked and keep the key hidden. Man, you don't want your kids opening that door. In most games, especially the older games, you're going to have your AC power switch underneath right there, and there's all your AC live right there, and it usually has a cover over it, and the cover's missing, and again, just safety points. Next, electrical. 220, 221, whatever it takes. Does anybody know where that line comes from? Thank you. Awesome. Like an automobile, pinball machines contain lots of electrical parts. Bulbs burn out. Parts can get hot. Circuits fail. Displays die. Batteries leak. There's a lot of information on the internet. You should own a manual. Don't know how to use a soldering iron? Don't. You create more damage for the repairman to repair, which equals more cost for you. Learn or find someone who's knowledgeable. It's not rocket science, but it's not Play-Doh. Any of you guys, and I know a lot of you have the repair boards, you know what happens when somebody who puts a 60-watt iron on that board does to it when they try to repair something. The infamous ungrounded plug. If a machine has a broken ground plug, get it fixed. Okay, go. Okay. If y'all want to come down to my booth and check my plugs, you're going to find I have one of those. I'm sorry. Okay? I'm not judging here. The reason I'm mentioning that is because I, like probably a lot of other people, have been standing there beside two machines. I got my hand on one and I stick my hand on the other rail, zap. It's a mild shock, but that's what happens. They got to be grounded. All the metal parts on that machine go to ground. And if it's not grounded, you have that can potentially happen. It won't kill you, but it doesn't feel very good. High voltage, want to poke around? 120 volts is common to all machines. Some machines have up to 240 volts DC, which hurts. Those displays, the nice orange displays on the late 70s to mid 80s games.
Late 80s,
thank
anything
you.
Anything alpha.
Right. All have 240 volts on them. They're like gas discharge displays. They require high voltage. If you've never owned a machine, you're not going to get into that, but again, it's just a warning. Power down and work. Never use tools around live circuits. I dropped a screw and something popped. Now the machine won't power up. See above. Yes, it happens. People love to get in there and go, well, gee, this is great. I'll fix this. And then they create more problems. I smell smoke. Don't panic. Power down. Carefully check things out. Call a repairman if you need them. Things are going to blow up. And things tend to, when they short out, they tend to let the smoke out of them. So it does happen. It's just a fact of life. Next. The big three or other, Ford, Chevy, Chrysler, or import, what year? I touched on this briefly earlier. Like autos, pinball manufacturers have come and gone over the year. The big three of pinball has always been Williams and Gottlieb, though not necessarily in that order. Stern, smaller manufacturer than the big three, still exists today. Some companies existed for short time periods, Chicago Coin, Game Plan, Pinstar, and some are of foreign origin. Zachariah, Playmatic. The big three is where you're going to get your biggest volume of titles. I mentioned earlier runs of 15,000. It was not uncommon for some game titles to have that many run in a production period. But that was back when pinball was hot. That was back in the 70s and the 80s, early 80s. 1950s pins, and you've seen these downstairs. You've seen all these. Those are the wood rails. That's the golden age of pinball. They're all electromechanical. They have simple play fields, basic rules. A lot of fun, great nostalgia. They were the basis on which, let me make clear, there was even pinball earlier than this, but it was even more basic. So I'm trying to refine this a little bit. 1960s, the Gottlieb era. Big three, Gottlieb, electromechanical, single and multiplayer, score reels, solenoid ball kickouts, back glass animation. Those are all the types of things that occurred in that period. You'll see this evolution of features. If you go back to the 50s, you're going to look at the manual ball pushouts. Most people are real surprised when they first walk up because they kind of go, how do I start this? And then they go, why isn't the ball coming out? Because back then they didn't have the mechanisms to do it. 1970s pins are really crossover pins. You saw most of the manufacturers go from electromechanical to solid state. Solid state meaning now the control of the system is completely electronic. Up to six players, electronic displays, control systems. We went from chimes to basic synthesized sounds, active memory, Bally and Williams dominated the industry. So we did have a crossover. Gottlieb used to be the big EM manufacturer. Didn't do so well in solid state. Williams and Bally took off. 1980s pins, an end. Complex sound, speech boards. First talking pinball was actually 1979. Anyone know what that is?
Corbar.
Thank you. Ramps and multi-level play fields and video sales create major slowdown in pinball manufacturing. Why that's called an end. For those not aware, by 1984, pinball had really taken a hit and was on its way out because video had just completely taken over with Pac-Man and everything else that was available. 1980s pins, a beginning. Bally Williams combined Gottlieb on a slow path of decline. Gottlieb was just about done at this point. Now, I've been corrected on this because I said Williams high speed saves pinball, but Evan tells me it was actually
Space Shuttle.
Thank you. Space Shuttle came out and had some things people had never seen before, and people really started getting interested in pinball again. Started seeing ramps, habit trails, alphanumeric displays. Game systems started using more self-diagnosis, and electronic systems went through radical changes. 1990s pins, end in sight, the most complex pins ever. Toys became the fascination. Go look at your Twilight Zones and your Addams Families and everything, your Circus Voltaires, Medieval Madness, all those pins. Soundtracks are carefully composed and produced. Incredible stuff. Licensing became a norm. You see stuff back in the 60s where the designers came up with just very basic, come up with a Western theme or come up with an automobile theme. The 70s, you saw a little bit more of the $6 Million Man or the Charlie's Angels stuff, but still it wasn't really, it wasn't all licensing. The early 80s pins, you saw a lot of, your Fathoms, your 8-Ball Deluxe, Centaurs, you know, still very imaginative things. By the 90s, that got a lot more into licensing, where it would feature a specific movie or that sort of thing. 1999, Pinball 2000 was released with an integral monitor, a handful of titles released and mixed reviews. Williams disbanded and closed its pinball division forever. And that's what most people consider the end of pinball. Of course, as I've said, Stern is still around, but you know, Williams and then Williams Bally were always really forerunners in the industry. So it's a lot different than it used to be. Next. All right. Parts is parts. Everything but the kitchen sink. All pinball machines contain parts that are commonly identified. Again, I'm sorry if this is boring. I'm trying to drive this from you don't know it. There's a cabinet, which is all your structure. The play field, which is the playing surface that has all the parts on it. And then the back box is that upper wood box. These are pictures of when I was working in the cabinet shop. That's when we produced Fathom cabinets. That's just the very lower part of the cabinet. Here's a WPC cabinet that was slated for Funhouse. And then the bottom one here, this was an early Bally head that was also going to go with Fathom. Again, you can see some pictures of the various stages of assembly here. So, again, there's a lot of parts involved in this. It's just like an automobile. You know, you got your interior, you got your motor, you got your transmission. Next. Now, in the back box is where they keep all the goodies. And I haven't showed you a picture of a head. In the inside the head is typically a group of boards, and I say variety of boards, variety of functions from a variety of manufacturers. I've just captured some shots of some different boards. Here's a main control board from a Williams System 11. There's a Bally Lamp driver board, an early Bally sound board, a Gottlieb System 80 solenoid driver board. Inside this back box, that's your main control unit. This is the guy that drives all your lamps and all your solenoids. Here's your sound and speech, and here's your power supply. Depending on the manufacturer, depending on the era, depending on all those things, some boards are combined, so you get this wide variety of different board setups that all do different things. So, next. Playfield. The playfield top. Playing surface. Parts that may or may not include painted wood with graphics, flippers, plastics, toys, lanes, inserts, drop targets, pop bumpers, ramps, kickouts, lamps, rubber rings, posts, yell out what I've forgotten. Playfield bottom. Underside parts commonly include various mechanisms, coils, lamps, wire harnesses, standoffs, switches, etc. I love to overwhelm people who aren't familiar with this stuff because there's a lot to it. And you'll get to know it if you get into it deep enough. But that's a Jungle Lord upper play field that has seen better days, and that's the bottom of it. Next. Maintenance. What do you mean I need to wax it? There's a couple different levels of maintenance. As a pinball owner, you're going to start out small and you're going to work your way up. Basic maintenance, you got to know how to get in the thing. You got to know how to remove the lockdown bar, pull the glass out, keep the play field clean and wet and waxed. How are you going to change your bulbs? You got to keep your batteries changed. Those nifty batteries up on your main board up there, guess what those batteries do after a while? They leak. After they leak, guess what they do? They tear the snot out of the board. Then what do? Then you go find somebody to repair it and you pay more money. Or you get a new board. Intermediate maintenance, keeping the switches clean, leveling the game, removing plastics, changing rubber rings, reseating connectors, removing the back glass, understanding game self-diagnostics. This is kind of a trend, you know, typically the way it goes. Ultimately, you're going to get under the hood and you're going to do things. I'm not encouraging the first-time owner to do that. It doesn't hurt to know how to do things, but you can get yourself in trouble. And then the advanced maintenance, board replacement, mechanical playfield repairs, wire harness repairs, power supply adjustments, module replacement, cosmetic repair and restoration. Huh. This is where you start getting into the big gun stuff and where you start finding people that can do things for you, because while there's a lot of collectors that know how to do all of these things, most people know a very specific limited part of it. And as a homeowner, if you own a game just for yourself or your kids and it's just for fun, you're not going to necessarily want to get involved in all this stuff because it's just not what you want to do. That's not the reason the game is in your home. It's there for you to have fun. So, unless you have advanced experience in pinball maintenance or repair, leave it to the pros. There's all kinds of people. And that's what shows like this are about. They're good venues to play and enjoy, to meet personalities, people that have been involved in the industry, to ask a lot of questions, to potentially find games you want to buy, and then to find people who can fix them if you need help. All right? That is my portion of the talk. Any questions or comments? Well, we can wait till afterwards if you'd like to. But... All right. I'm going to introduce Evan Smith. Evan's going to talk a little bit, kind of take it from here. Go ahead to the next slide. You stayed awake so far, thanks. Appreciate your attention. Please welcome Evan, who'd like to talk more about trials, tribulations, and pleasures of pinball repair. Evan is a local service technician who runs his own business, the Pinsmith. I work with Evan. I do a lot of his board repairs for him. But Evan's very, very well experienced. He covers the DFW area and beyond if needed. And I'll let him take over from here.
All right. Thank you. My name is Evan Smith. I've been doing this for about 7 years now. I have seen just about everything. Going to people's homes on a daily basis, I see all kinds of problems. I see people trying to fix problems that they just don't know what they're doing. And just want to give you guys a general overview of what you should be looking at and basically how pinball works. Really, I could go on and on and on. There's a lot to know. So the basic rule is, if you don't feel comfortable doing it, don't do it. Like Chris said, if you don't have solder skills, don't pick up a soldering iron. You can do a lot more harm than good. So work on what you're comfortable with. The basic thing to start with is lamps. You can change lamps under the play field. You can change parts that you know are bad. If there's nothing wrong with it, don't fix it. If it's working fine, don't take it apart. Don't get in there and start fooling around with it. Pinballs are very basic when you think about it. You have solenoids, lamps, switches, and then sound and display. But it's isolated. A lamp problem does not cause a coil problem. A coil problem doesn't cause a switch problem. You know, if a ball goes in a hole and it doesn't come out, well, does it come out after a ball surge, or does it ever know the ball is there? So you've got to be able to distinguish between switches and coils. So don't overdo it. Don't overthink it. You know, go straight to the problem and kind of focus on that. The first step really is buy a manual. The manual will tell you everything that you've ever wanted to know about that game. You have full schematics, you have a switch matrix and a lamp matrix, a solenoid list, and game operation, how to play your game, that kind of thing. So learn your test mode. The test mode is where everything revolves around. Every game is a little different, from Williams to Bally to Gottlieb. It just depends, but it's all basically the same. You'll have a lamp test, a switch test, a coil test, sound test, display test. And you know, the first one's usually lamp test. It'll flash every lamp in the game. And if it's not flashing, check the bulb. Actually, the first thing to check is the socket. If you twist that bulb and it comes on, it's not the bulb. It's probably the connection to the socket. So don't waste bulbs doing that. But once you get all your lamps working, you move on to the next test. One word on lamps. Classic Bally and Classic Stern did not use a matrix for their lamps. But when I say matrix, all the lamps in Williams are connected in a grid. You have lamp, you have rows and columns. So if you have eight lamps out, you may have a broken wire or a board problem on that row or column. It's not, you know, like Classic Bally, they had a transistor or an SCR that drove every single lamp. So you can have a problem on your board if you don't have, if you change a bulb and it still doesn't work, you're looking at board problems most of the time. The difference between CPU-controlled lamps and GI. GI is general illumination. That's the lamps that go all the way around your play field. They're always on. They don't do anything. They might flicker through a relay, but they're always on. They're hardwired. They are fused, but they're not controlled. They don't control any features, like in the middle of the play field, for your arrows and your target lamps, that kind of thing. So lamp test flashes all your controlled lamps. GI is different, and you may find burnt connectors. Very common problem on GI. These games sat in arcades for years and stayed on 24 hours a day. So these connectors get burnt. They get real hot. And you have a male pin on the board, and you have a female connector that goes onto it, and a lot of times that female plastic connector is just black. You have to replace that. You have to pull the board, replace the male header pins. You know, it's a lot to it if you're not comfortable, again, replacing, you know, to resolder the male pins on the board, and then you need to get somebody out to do that. But just so you know, if your GI is out, it's probably burnt connector. Switches. Biggest problem in pinball is switches. If you think there's a problem, it's probably a switch. Earlier games used all leaf switches. You have two blades of metal, just separated by about a 16th of an inch. And when you roll over that switch, it closes those two pieces of metal. You can clean those switches by fine grit sandpaper, fold it in half, 400, 600 grit, fold it in half, put it into that switch, apply a little pressure, pull it out a couple times, and you're done. Make sure the gap on the switch is proper. Make sure it's at about a 16th, no more than an 1/8 of an inch. Make sure that it closes. And that's probably going to take care of it. The newer model games, anything from about mid-80s on, they started using micro switches, which if you close the switch, you can hear a little click. If you can hear it. Some people can't hear it, but it's a tiny little click inside that switch. Micro switches can go bad, but most of the time it is the wiring to the switch. The diode, make sure that it's on right. Compare the way one switch looks to another in the game to see if it's wired up right. You know, you'll have rows and columns on your switch matrix as well. So if you have more than one switch out, it's probably a wiring problem or a board problem instead of just that switch. So you need to kind of recognize that. If you have one problem in your game, focus on the one problem. Don't start replacing boards. I see people buying boards and replacing all these boards, you know, thinking that that's going to fix it when the problem's on the play field most of the time.
Let me make a point. People make a mistake in repair and believe in general that a working board means a working game. And that could not be more false. A lot of problems occur within the game because, as Evan says, it's a switch issue, it's a connection issue. It's not the board, so keep that in mind if you get to that level.
Yeah. A good place to start is corrosion. Chris talked about the batteries. If there's any corrosion on your board, in your connectors, in your game, anywhere, that's probably your problem. If you see an old battery, you know, the old classic Bally, 77 to 85, they all had a factory-installed battery on the board, NiCad. And if that game didn't get played for a year, it sat in somebody's garage, it's been corroded. I guarantee it. And you have to get that battery off of there. You have to strip that corrosion off of there. And that's not something I really recommend you to do, but you need somebody like Chris and myself to remove that corrosion because it spreads. It spreads like a fungus, and it won't stop until it's gone. But you get corrosion in a connector, and you know it causes all kinds of problems. You'll never track it down. You'll think it's a switch. You'll think it's a coil when it's a corroded connector, really.
I want to add something else, too. New boards. There's a lot of manufacturers out there that manufacture brand-new boards for these systems. You've seen them downstairs. I am not suggesting that new boards are not good. They're great. They're remanufactured with current parts. They're built to be very robust. However, I want you to keep in mind that the original board sets that went in these games were built for commercial use. They were built to be beat on. They were built to deal with heat and whatnot. Okay, there's exceptions to that. My point being that if you have an original board set in your game and you've got problems with it, the chances are very good, unless it's maybe a Gauntlet System 1, chances are very good that board set can be repaired to original factory standards and last for a long time. You have to remember that in a home environment, games do not undergo the same stresses that they did in the arcades. As Evan said, being on 24 hours and whatnot. They're going to be played for a couple hours and shut down. And yes, folks, you can turn your games on and off without any problem. You don't have to keep them on all the time. That's a common question.
Yeah, it's better to leave your game off unless you're playing it, unless you have guests over. You know, feel free to leave it on all day long. It doesn't hurt it at all. It's not all day, every day, because lamps burn out, connectors burn. You know, it creates a lot of heat taxing on your power supply. So that kind of thing. Do you have a question?
Yeah, a question about corrosion.
Yep.
We had an older game. I put it out of storage, took the batteries out. Before I did that, I noticed some corrosion on the board.
Yeah.
The corrosion continues to grow as long as there's power flowing. Once it's unplugged, put it in storage, is that corrosion idle?
No. Corrosion will grow in any state, whether it's on or off. But before your batteries leaked, you know, however many years ago that was, as long as the game is turned on periodically, as long as it's played, the batteries don't tend to corrode as much. But if it's stored with batteries in it, the batteries will leak a lot more readily if the game's not being played. But no, you take the batteries out, the corrosion's still on your board, and it'll still spread. It's like yeast. It's like fungus. It grows.
And depending on how bad it is, a lot of those boards can be repaired. But it takes somebody who's qualified to do it. Most people will go out and buy a new board. They'll spend $200 on a new board, okay? You can spend less than half that to get your board repaired in most cases.
Yeah. Okay. Repair is always, always cheaper than replacement. Always. The only time I really advocate replacement, like he said, Gottlieb System 1 is not an easily repairable board. Or System 80 for that matter. You know, all the Gottliebs in the early to late 80s are not easily repaired. So replacement boards are a good idea. Another is if the corrosion is so bad. If you have a corroded area that's bigger than this, your board's probably shot. Now Chris here is the king of corrosion. He can really remove and replace any component, shine the contacts up, and really remove it completely. But the larger the area, the more work it is for him, and the traces break. The little lines that you see down your board, all those traces will break with the corrosion eats right through them. And if it's a broken trace, it has to be jumped. You have to put wires all along the back of the board, and it's just not practical.
System
makes sense to do.
System 11. I showed you folks pictures of boards. System 11 is notorious for that. It's interesting because it's almost as though when the manufacturers built these boards, they built obsolescence into them. I don't think that was intentional because they only had so much room. They had to put the batteries on the board. But, man, these boards, and the newer the boards, the smaller the traces.
Yeah.
And corrosion does more damage. The older boards are easier to repair. But System 11, it can be real tricky sometimes, and they're more expensive boards.
Yeah, classic Bally and Stern can almost always be repaired. I haven't found one Chris can't repair, but some are worse than others. Just keep that in mind. But moving on to coils. We talked about lamps and switches. Coils are the heart of your game. That's everything that you hear pop. Every slingshot, every top bumper, every kickout hole, every plunger, your auto fire, your out hole kicker that puts the ball into your trough, the trough kicker that puts it from the trough to the shooter lane.
On your flippers. The mechanical game, your score.
Yeah, your score reels on an EM game. Everything that does anything is a coil. It's a solenoid, it's a coil of wire, it's an electromagnet, and you've got a plunger that moves in and out of that coil. There is danger involved in coils. It's the only thing, besides displays, the high voltage gas discharge displays will shock you pretty good, but coils are your main concern. If you lift up your play field and your game is on, the coils are probably hot. You're looking at anywhere from 40 to 70 volts DC. Newer games starting about 1990, starting about WPC era, 1991, they started putting an interlock in the coin door. You open up the coin door, it shuts off the power to the coil, so you can touch anything in the game without getting hurt. But just keep that in mind. If that coil voltage is hot, you will get shocked. Lubricants. This is important. If you don't get anything out of this session, remember this. Do not use WD-40 or any lubricant of any kind. I tell people that just because it's a good general overview. Don't pick up a can of anything and spray it in the pinball machine. All the coils are designed to work dry. If there's any lubricant in there at all, it'll just gum it up, and it'll all have to be taken apart and cleaned anyway. Just a side note here, I do use a dry lubricant when I work on games. If there's something sticking, namely the outhole kicker, the trough-up kicker, or any hole kicker, you see it kick and then just kind of sluggishly return, get some dry lube. That's not silicone, that's a dry lube. It's actually made with PTFE. It's got a yellow cap on it. Just a couple different manufacturers. You can pick it up at Lowe's or Home Depot. Just make sure that it's a dry lube. It'll say that right on the can. Shorts and fuses. Your most common problem in a pinball machine is it won't kick my ball out. It's probably a blown fuse, and the fuse probably blew because a transistor shorted. Transistor probably shorted because your coil shorted. So if you smell anything burning, it's probably because a coil has pulled in and held. Coils are designed to be fired almost instantly. It's a pop. It's not a if that coil pulls in and holds, it's pulling way too much current and it's going to burn, which is going to short the coil, short the transistor that drives it, and blow your fuse. So if you find a blown fuse in your game and you replace the fuse and it blows again, go ahead and just stop right there. You've got board work to be done because there's a transistor on your board somewhere or a coil in your game somewhere that has shorted. You can't replace a shorted coil without replacing its transistor, or you're just going to burn another coil. Every coil in a game has a transistor that drives it, just like your classic Bally lamps. You have an individual transistor for every lamp. Well, for every coil in every pinball, solid state. Is anything made after 77, you've got a transistor on the board. So it's not simple to replace those transistors. If you don't have board repair experience, you're not going to find that easy. Coil replacement is somewhat easy. If you can get a soldering iron and you can strip wire and you can solder the wires to the lugs of the coil, making sure that the diode's facing the right direction because that keeps the board from burning up. But if you need transistors replaced, you're probably going to have to call somebody like us to replace your transistor. If you do have board repair experience, now see, I graduated from DeVry, got my degree, and I knew more about electronics than most people before I even got into the pinball. So if you do have technical experience, feel free to try your board repair. Just make sure you know kind of what you're doing. The manual will tell you what transistor drove that coil and the part number for the coil. So, that's the skinny on coil repair. Batteries and corrosion, we already kind of covered that. About every 2 or 3 years, you may want to get in there and replace your batteries. Most games just have 3 AA batteries in it, and they're real simple to change.
Evan, talking into the mic, they can't hear you in the back.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's better?
Closer to the mic.
Okay.
Bend it towards you, yeah.
All right. Is that a little better?
Yeah, it's much better.
All right. Batteries in your board need to be replaced every couple of years. If you replace your batteries and it's still not saving your memory, your game's mysteriously coming off of free play, you're losing your high scores, The corrosion's probably already started. You probably have just a touch of it on your battery holder, and you can file it off or replace the battery holder. But if the corrosion hits that board, you've got to get it off or it'll keep spreading. And the big topic, flippers. Flippers are how you connect with your game. A weak flipper will kill the fun of the game. It's no fun if you can't flip that ball all the way to the top. A flipper's pretty basic. It's just another coil in the game, but flippers are directly driven. You have a flipper cabinet switch that grounds it out, and you've got an end-of-stroke switch on the flipper. Before 1991 or so, before they came out with Fliptronics, which was a digital flipper, all flippers, including electromechanicals, used an end-of-stroke switch, or EOS. If that switch isn't closed, the flipper won't flip. If it doesn't open at full extension, the flipper will burn. So that's what distinguishes between high and low power in your flipper. When you flip the flipper, you want high power to give it the punch. When you're holding the flipper in, you want it to have the low power so that it doesn't burn. So that end of stroke is crucial. Weak flippers can be usually fixed by cleaning the end of stroke switch with a point file, cleaning the cabinet switch with a point file, getting a new sleeve for the flipper. There's a plastic nylon sleeve that's inside that plunger, and that can cause some drag. It could be a mechanical problem. There's a crank in there that actually holds onto the flipper bat and that goes into the flipper coil. They do sell flipper rebuild kits. Personally, I think it's a little overkill. I like to replace the parts that actually need replacing, but you can replace everything and just kind of take care of it. The coil stop, the crank, the sleeve, the coil, the end of stroke switch. You replace all that, you've got a good flipper. There's really no question about it. The only thing left would be the cabinet switch. WPC, starting about 91, Adams Family era, they started using a Fliptronics board, which instead of that end of stroke switch being normally closed, it was normally open, and it was low power. You didn't have any high voltage going through it, so the flipper would flip, and when the end of stroke closed, it shut off the high power to it using a special board inside the game. So, you know, that's really about it on flippers. But is there any other questions that you guys have? Yes, sir.
My flipper will play a while, and then after playing 15 or 20 minutes, it may just want to stay stuck up.
Yeah.
Like that, and then you kind of work it, and then it'll come back down. But it works, but after
just getting stuck.
My flipper will stay up.
Okay, a couple different things. Check the sleeve. And check whether there's a little arm on the crank. As your flipper flips, there's a little finger that comes around to open that end of stroke switch, and that little finger can get caught on the end of stroke switch. So, you know, if it's all about the adjustment. You can move the end of stroke with your hand, but turn the game off, obviously. And at full extension, that end of stroke needs to be open about an eighth of an inch. So if it's too close to the crank, it's going to be opening too much. And if it's too far away, it's not going to be opening enough. It has to be just right. But, you know, if the end of stroke has any, you know, I've seen an end of stroke break where the edge of the switch has a little break in it from being hit over and over again, you know, and that little arm will get caught on it. So that's usually a mechanical problem, not an electrical problem, if it's getting stuck in the up position. I have seen quite a few other issues, though. I've seen a flipper get stuck because the diode was bad, but that's not very common. So check your cabinet switch. If there's some reason that the flipper cabinet switch is staying closed, you know, if you have to beat on the side of the cabinet to get it to unstick, it might be the cabinet switch. But that's usually about it for sticking, because the sleeve can cause some drag and keep the flipper from returning back down. The spring. The only thing the spring is for is to return the flipper back down. That's all it does. So if it's not pulling it back down, that could be why it's getting stuck as well. Any other questions? Yes?
I've noticed on some people games how sometimes you can get both flippers at the same time, the game will shut off.
Yeah.
I know that has to do something with the board, but mm-hmm. What exactly is that?
That is the most common WPC problem. Anything made in the 90s, basically. Bally Williams. That's going to be your 5-volt line. That's going to be the power supply on your board. The flippers draw the most energy in the game. So you can hit the left flipper over and over and over. You can hit the right flipper over and over and over. The second you hit both at the same time, the game goes down, comes back up, resets. It's the 5-volt line. 5 volts runs all logic in every solid-state game. And without a good solid 5 volts, it won't stay up. You'll have periodic resets and that kind of thing. So there's a bridge and a cap on the power supply that would have to be replaced, specifically VR2 and C5. That's on WPC. WPC 95 went from a bridge to 4 diodes, so it's usually not the diode, it's usually that cap. That cap would take care of it. But before you do that, a lot of times it's just the connector. There's a connector on the right side of the board with 2 red wires, and that's where the AC comes in for the 5-volt supply. And that can have a bad connection inside it. You can reseat it. You can get a small little screwdriver and make sure the wires are pushed into the crimp. And also the 5 and ground out between the CPU and the driver. You know, just make sure your 5 volts is solid. That's exactly what it's doing. Any other questions, guys?
On a Spider-Man, a flipper, what kind of makes a buzz, you know, when you start, they think that's the first one
wrong. That's a new stern? Yeah. I haven't quite figured out a fix for that. A lot of times it's because the plunger isn't making adequate connection with the coil stop at the other end of the coil. If it's not, if it doesn't have a smooth surface to adhere to, you know, to magnetize to, then it's just kind of rattling there. So, you know, if you can make sure the coil stop, the little round bit right in the middle of the coil stop is smooth and flat, and the edge of your plunger is smooth and flat, that'll probably take care of it. And make sure there's no wiggle in your coil, that kind of thing.
What is black dust on
soot, heat. Games with black rubber get a lot of black nasty on the play field. And you know, the ball just goes around and collects all that and deposits it on the play field. So over time, you just have to wax it up. A note on wax, I don't use a wax per se. I use Novus 2. It's pretty much an industry standard for polish. It will polish the oldest of nastiest play fields and make it beautiful. But, you know, you can get that through most any supplier. But, yeah, that black stuff will come right off. A little elbow grease.
Do you have an spray air or spray?
Really?
Are you talking about on top of the play field or under the play field? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really always a good idea to polish it, you know, not just to blow it off, but to wipe it clean, because it'll, you know, that'll get every last speck of dirt that you can't see, and it makes the ball travel a lot quicker, and it'll prevent playfield wear, keep it from tearing it up. So keep your playfield clean. A dirty playfield will just ruin over time. Yes, sir? Basically, as often as you want to. If you play your game a lot, it's going to get dirty quicker, obviously. You know, I'd say every few months, really. It's kind of up to you. It depends on how quick it's getting dirty. Clean it when you see, if you can see a layer of dirt on there, clean it.
Or ball trails. You'll
start seeing little black lines down the end lanes where the ball's traveling, and that'll come right off with Novus.
Can you clean the balls?
Not necessarily. I usually just stick them in my shirt, wipe them off.
Well, you can
clean them with anything. As long as they don't have any rust spots on them, you know, look at the ball, make sure that it doesn't have any pits and scrapes on it. You know, feel it, is it smooth? Because that'll also tear up your play field.
You know, this is I apologize. This is such a tough subject. When it was first approached to do the seminar, it's like, boy, you know, Evan and I have talked and. This is a huge topic, and obviously I covered from the very basic to, you know, you start getting into maintenance. I mean, we could keep going. I mean, I could talk to you about different things I've used to clean old play fields that you probably would go, huh, and it works great, but, you know, we're just about out of time. Are we, Jim?
Yes.
Yeah, so.
We're all done?
But,
do you have an email address or a phone number?
Do
you encounter something?
Come down.
Come by our booth. We've got a booth over on the other end of the floor, the Pinsmith. You'll see my AG soccer ball out there. It's been kind of the talk of the show a little bit. But, you know, that green soccer ball game with the little marquee and the head-to-head game. You can come by, pick up a business card, and get you taken care of. Pretty much any service can be done within an hour. Most service call or single hour, $100.
Hey, thanks, everyone. I hope you learned something. If you have any questions, feel free to come and ask us.